Lucas on Life.
Hello, welcome to Lucas on Life. I'm Jeff Lucas, and I don't know how many shopping days there are to Christmas because I haven't done the maths. But what I do know is that I've got some friends who were utterly, totally prepared. I mean, the decorations are sorted. The tree is up. It's beautifully lit. It hasn't fallen over. Some of them, I mean, it's ridiculous. They've got all of their shopping and their gifts sorted. They've even organized the food. Did you know that the average person chomps their way through a whopping 7,000 calories on Christmas Day? Well, whatever stage of preparation you're in, and frankly, Kay and me, we just haven't even started yet, we are now in the Advent season. The word Advent means coming, and during the season, Christians prepare for the coming of Jesus, celebrating his coming to the earth, celebrating with hope and joy his coming to us when we invite him to take charge of our lives, and then his second final coming again. It's my favorite time of the year. Sounds like a song, I know. But let's face it, for some of us, we're not exactly dreaming of a white snow Christmas because the season is somewhat grey. Personally, I'm somewhat affected by a grey Christmas because my dad passed away, yes, decades ago, but it was in December, just before Christmas. And so Christmassy music always brings a mixture of emotions to me. Joy about the truth of Christ's coming, anticipation about the gatherings with family and friends, and yet lingering sadness about the reality of my dad's passing. Let's face it, in our own personal lives, circumstances can conspire to take the edge off of Christmas or even rob us of joy altogether. So tonight, let's think about how we might prepare our hearts in this season, whatever the circumstances are that we find ourselves in. You're listening to Lucas on Life here on Premier Christian Radio. I'm Jeff Lucas. This is Lucas on Life here on Premier Christian Radio. Thanks so much for joining me. Strange things are said and done when Christmas comes around. Recently, I was served a cheeseburger by a deer. The management of my local fast food eatery had required their smiling staff to wear large scarlet antlers festooned with blinking fairy lights. Very tasteful. As for background music, a track from the compilation playlist, now that's what I call music to go mad by, was warbling. Christmas is a time for us to be together, the singer sung. Christmas is a time for us to love each other. The music and the wildlife together conspired to create a warm, ambient atmosphere conducive to the season of goodwill. I glanced around the restaurant for confirmation that people were indeed loving one another. A stone-faced lady and her hat-wearing husband sat silently at a corner table. There was something vaguely menacing about the way she tore tiny, carnivorous bites out of her cheeseburger a la Hannibal Lecter. Occasional frosty glares were exchanged. Palpable tension crackled between them like static electricity. And hark, over yonder in the other corner, another chirpy family outing was unraveling as a manic infant on Duracells swirled milkshake around his head, gloriously baptizing nearby tut-tutting tables in strawberry blobs. Suddenly, the gap between the image of Christmas as it's supposed to be and the reality of how it actually can be yawned before me like the Grand Canyon. Is that gap part of the reason why some find the whole business of Christmas challenging, even depressing? Marital tensions, life-draining diseases, and worries about redundancy are pressures that don't take time off for Christmas, politely disappearing for the cheery season and popping back after Boxing Day. The idea of a happy zone magical season can taunt us with its sheer unreality, especially if one is required to share the festivities with distant family members who irritate you into assassination fantasies before the king has barely begun his afternoon national chat. The unreality has spread to the reason for the season itself. I have a few Christmas cards where artists have daubed the traditional nativity scene in unreal colours, tarting it all up with a false garish glory. A serenely calm Mary, who apparently chose to give birth while dressed from head to foot as a blue nun, glows with soft fluorescence, courtesy of a goldfish bowl-shaped halo. Joseph, well, he's normally absent from the scene. Perhaps he's out the back trying to straighten out a wonky coffee table he made earlier. And baby Jesus, himself adorned with a junior-sized goldfish bowl halo, is sitting up already and appears to be thanking the wise men for coming to his party. All rather good for one who is but 30 minutes old. Grinning cattle peer at the family from neat hay bales that seem to whiff of Chanel No. 5. There's none of that substance. The polite term is the offensive cow pat. Inoffensive, unless your name happens to be Pat, that is usually in abundance when cattle are around. Of course not. Even the old beloved carol suggests a scene of blatant unreality. The cattle are lowing. The baby awakes. But little Lord Jesus, no crying he makes. Really? Why wouldn't Jesus cry? Perhaps he'd alert all and sundry to the fact that he needed his swaddling cloths changing with a raised hand of blessing rather than a heartfelt scream, what with him being the Son of God and all. I'm not being irreverent here, but I think the wonder of Christmas is the sheer earthiness. It's all so ordinary, confusing, bewildering for that young couple with their newborn. The irony is that Christmas is about the story of the extraordinary God kissing a very ordinary world. The true splendor of the Nativity is the notion of a God landing without much fanfare or fuss, welcomed by a few night workers and traveling mystics. The king shows up in squalor. Like a heavenly bungee jumper, he shunned the pristine order of heaven to dive down into our sweaty, confused, fog-bound world and announced a new order of living. Christmas says that we no longer need to haul ourselves heavenward by our own bootlaces, but that God comes to rescue those who whisper an invitation to him. Christmas. It's about the God who is willing to close the gap. So this is Christmas, and what have you done? So inquired John Lennon. Actually, quite a bit, I think, through gritted teeth. For most of us, the Yuletide event ushers us into the season to be frantic. That's ironic, because the very first Christmas took place in a more tranquil, pastoral setting, with an angelic big band scaring the living daylights out of a herd of shepherds. Sheep watching isn't terribly exhilarating, and those chaps weren't used to sudden supernatural sing-songs, seeing as they had possibly the most boring job in the world. But then the night sky lit up with angelic neon, electrifying what had just been another predictable, relatively peaceful nighttime, and nothing would ever be quite the same. My own Christmas preparations have not been so emotionally serene or exciting. The tribulation always begins with the acquisition of the Christmas tree, which is usually portrayed in the movies as a joyous family event, when a group of smiling souls, usually adorned in ridiculous snowman sweaters and fluffy earmuffs, go in search of the perfect tree. Scrambling around the loft looking for the tired plastic version isn't nearly as heartwarming. So last year we opted for the real thing, a poor decision that led to a minor bloodletting. I held up 4,327 trees before we were able to opt for the tree of choice. All right, it was more likely just around a dozen, but I handled enough trees to end up with bleeding hands and a coat that smelled of pine for weeks afterwards. And then the tree grew at least a foot after I'd purchased it. And so in trying to maneuver what looked like a netting-encased corpse into the back of my car, I got repeatedly stabbed by those pesky pine needles, receiving splinters from the trunk, and then nearly seriously injured a cyclist on the way home because wayward branches were sticking out of the windows. This elicited a number of expressions of praise and worship, or something like that, from yours truly. Bah, humbug. Then, because I had to do battle with the tree stand, which was designed by a crazed inventor who is on a crusade to tempt Christian leaders to swear. One is required to fill the wretched contraption with cold water and then hold the tree with one hand while simultaneously kneeling before it to twist ill-fitting bolts into the trunk. This resulted in a tilting tree reminiscent of the Leaning Tower of Pisa and a stand filled with pine needle soup, which of course spilled over onto the carpet. Oh, deep and abiding joy. Then came the annual ritual of the tree lights, an occasion that I not only fear, but sometimes dream about. Actually, they're nightmares, and for very good reason. Our tree lights are the self-knotting variety. Even though we carefully pack them away when their job is done each year, someone apparently breaks into our loft with the sole agenda of tying them up into insurmountable tangles. The chaotic green jumble of cable is finally untangled, and then we always discover that one of the bulbs doesn't work, and so we insert and remove bulbs, and that string of light is still dark, nudging us to potentially more thoroughly unchristian muttering. But then, staggeringly, we place that useless string of lights back into its box and pack it away. We will retrieve it again next year and repeat the same fun ritual. Untangle, insert bulbs, remove bulbs, mutter, replace in box for another year. It's been said that one definition of insanity is doing the same thing over and over again and expecting different results. As I place those redundant lights back in their box, muttering to self that it will be different next year because they will work, I wonder if I have truly gone mad. But my tree wrestling was not the most stressful or embarrassing event of last Christmas. No, my biggest gaffe happened when I drove to the butcher's to collect the turkey, and it should have been such a simple enough task, but not, of course, for me. Nothing is ever simple. I placed the big bird on the passenger's seat, began my drive home, and suddenly a warning light came on, accompanied by a shrill beeping noise. It was the seatbelt warning signal. The car has a built-in sensor in each seat and detects that a passenger is present, but that a seatbelt has not been fastened. Now, my friend, the turkey, only weighed about 20 pounds, was frozen and dead. Nevertheless, my car was insistent. I was carrying an unsecured passenger. I know. I could have simply pulled over and placed the turkey on the floor of the car, the simplest, the most obvious solution. But I reached across, grabbed the seatbelt and strapped that turkey in. I believe I'm the only man in the UK, maybe in history, whose chauffeur drives seatbelt-protected dead birds. And all of that because I just didn't pause to think. Thoughtlessness. That's why I didn't measure the tree, wear protective gloves while putting it in the car, secure wayward branches, or fill the stand with water after securing the tree in the stand. That's why I lobbed the defunct tree lights back in their box instead of in the bin. And that's why I clunk-clicked a frozen bird, because I didn't pause long enough to think. In the baubles and the blur that is Christmas, we can so easily miss the point of it all because Dasher has become our name, borrowed from a reindeer, ironically. It's been said that on all gravestones, there's only one thing that's in common, whatever the specific details of the deceased, and that's the dash, John Smith. 9th of April, 1903, dash 6th of January, 1983. 80 years or so, but there's still always the dash. Life is a dash, and often never more so than at Christmas, because in our fervent hunt for the right pair of socks for Uncle Sid or slippers for Auntie Vera, we neglect to think about the fact that Christmas means wondrous international rescue by the God who refused to just watch us from a distance. Our world is not an abandoned planet spinning in lonely space. We're a visited people. Christ has come. Surely we need to give ourselves the luxurious gift of 10 minutes to think about, to ponder that wonderful truth and unpack it with gratitude. And just as Christmas came first to those on the margins, because shepherding was a chosen occupation for rascals, so the message of peace and joy includes those who, through no fault of their own, have very little under the tree, or maybe no tree at all. Let's think this Christmas and plan and give, lest Christmas becomes a love feast of self-indulgence. And let's think too about those who, as I mentioned earlier, find the season somewhat unbearable, who are mugged by nostalgia mingled with despair as they look back and ache for better bygone days when smiles and songs were shared with loved ones now departed and greatly missed. Let's notice them and think hard about how we might take some joy their way. It can be done, and it might not take very much. To quote another song immortalized by Judy Garland, when Christmas does come around, well then, have yourself a merry little Christmas, as Judy sang wistfully. From now on, all our troubles will be out of sight. Out of sight indeed, because those Christmas tree lights, they still don't work. Thanks so much for joining me this Sunday evening. As we continue to march towards Christmas time, my prayer is that you'll have a happy, thoughtful, peaceful Christmas. Why not join me next Sunday evening when I'll be digging into some of those familiar carols that we sing and unearthing some of the stories behind them. See you next week.
Lucas on Life.
Experience holiday cheer at Tanger Outlets with savings up to 70% off your favorite brands. From fragrances to accessories and the latest styles, discover the best gifts for everyone on your list. Save big at Nike Factory Store, Michael Kors, Under Armour, Coach, Polo Ralph Lauren, Kate Spade New York, and so many more. Unwrap the best at Tanger Outlets. Hundreds of brands, endless gifting options. Plan your trip at tanger.com.